That was the choice, the real choice, between leaving or escalating.
Ending the U.S.'s longest war. It's Thursday, September 2nd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascao in Washington. You'll also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Russian diplomacy with the Taliban. Former refugees welcome Afghans. Electric-powered buses in Kenya. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Americans, Afghans, and others airlifted out of Afghanistan by U.S. military. A suicide bombing that killed 13 U.S. service members and 169 Afghans. Between 100 to 200 Americans still left in the now Taliban-controlled country. These are among the reasons U.S. President Joe Biden is facing intense criticism of his administration's chaotic evacuation. Biden gave a speech on Tuesday and once again defended how he has ended America's longest war. VOA's Patsy Wiedekuswara has the story.
The Taliban celebrated on the streets of Kabul following the U.S. military's complete withdrawal from Afghanistan and the last American planes leaving. On Tuesday, the U.S. Commander-in-Chief announced the end of America's longest war.
I was not going to extend this forever war. And I was not extending a forever exit.
President Joe Biden repeated his reason to end the war that has spanned 20 years and four American presidents.
So we're left with a simple decision. Either follow through on the commitment made by the last administration and leave Afghanistan, or say we weren't leaving and commit another tens of thousands more troops going back to war. That was the choice, the real choice, between leaving or escalating.
Last week's suicide bomb attacks by ISIS-K, also known as the Khorasan Network, a self-proclaimed branch of the militant group active in Central and South Asia that took the lives of 13 American soldiers and more than 150 Afghans, triggered more criticism of the withdrawal. But some analysts say Biden is right to end the mission now.
In the longer run, I think the withdrawal will look more like the withdrawal from Vietnam. Short-term, a hit, in the longer term, cleared the way for resetting strategic priorities, refocusing American foreign policy, investing in the economy at home rather than the economy abroad.
The withdrawal was also marred by chaotic scenes as Afghans, fearful of Taliban rule, rushed to the airport hoping to be evacuated. Biden defended the operation.
No nation has ever done anything like it in all of history. Only the United States had the capacity and the will and ability to do it, and we did it today. The extraordinary success of this mission was due to the incredible skill, bravery, and selfless courage of the United States military and our diplomats and intelligence professionals.
The administration vowed to get about 200 self-identified Americans still in Afghanistan out of the country. Meanwhile, critics say potentially thousands of Afghans who assisted Americans during the war have been left behind and are now in fear of the Taliban's retribution.
There's been inconsistent policies as to who's the priority at the gate. One minute, the State Department is telling humanitarian organizations and individuals to bring busloads or groups of people in, or telling certain individuals to go there. And then the next minute, it's U.S. passport holders only or green card holders only.
Responding to VOA, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki denied those allegations.
I have no confirmation of what you've just outlined. What I will tell you is that 117,000 approximately, many of them Afghans, people who were not American citizens, were evacuated. That's more people than ever in any airlift in U.S. history.
Following the end of the Afghan war, Biden vowed he would approach foreign policy through the prism of U.S. interests, including how best to continue to keep the American people safe. Patsy Wiedekuswara, VOA News at the White House.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook VOA Asia and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. UN study, weather disasters increase by 5 times in 50 years. 7 Hong Kong activists sentenced for taking part in 2019 anti-government protest. Australia to prioritize mental and physical well-being of Afghan refugees. Experts, North Korea may be pushing Biden for nuclear deal Trump rejected. South Korea bans Google, Apple payment monopolies. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. Russia is looking south to Afghanistan once again to see how it can benefit from a situation fraught with both opportunity and risk. VOA's Margaret Bashir reports.
Although it officially labels the Taliban a terrorist organization, Russia has been engaging with its leaders for years, even inviting them to Moscow. As Western nations view the U.S. and NATO's exit with anxiety, Moscow has struck a softer tone.
Currently, we believe that there is no point in panicking. The main point is that a widespread bloodbath among civilians has been avoided. We urge all Afghan parties to refrain from hostilities and to foster a settlement peacefully.
Moscow had its own intervention in Afghanistan in 1979. Its troops invaded to prop up a communist government fighting Islamist rebels known as the Mujahideen. What was supposed to be a quick military operation dragged on for nearly a decade. Soon after the Soviet withdrawal, the communist regime collapsed. Today, Moscow has taken a more pragmatic position.
Moscow is very eager to take advantage of a perceived power vacuum. And so they are on the ground. They are not going to be removing their embassy. I think they would be one of likely the first countries potentially to recognize the Taliban, although I think we're still far away from that potential point.
Russia is keen to prevent the export of Islamist extremists and fighters to Central Asia. And it hopes the Taliban will curb the flow of illicit drugs to its region. Meantime, the U.S. withdrawal has been a propaganda gift for Moscow.
Of course, Afghanistan also matters internationally for Russia as a showcase of, you know, the weakness of the United States, which also benefits Russia significantly as a talking point and an example in its efforts in places like Ukraine and Venezuela and elsewhere.
Ultimately, it seems clear that Moscow hopes to fill the vacuum left by America's departure to boost its own regional influence. Margaret Bashir, VOA News.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, Afghan refugees find a welcoming community in one U.S. city that's home to many former refugees from Vietnam. Happening now in Asia, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and thousands of youth group members pose for a photo outside a massive palace on the outskirts of the capital, Pyongyang. State media reported on Tuesday. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Tens of thousands of Afghans are expected to resettle in the U.S. One family migrated to Houston, Texas, where it is starting its new life. As VOA's Dina Mitchell reports, they found a welcoming community among other people who know what it's like to acclimate to a new country.
When the Siddiqui family fled Afghanistan last week, they had nothing except the clothes they were wearing. Now in Houston, Texas, under the care of YMCA International, the family of four is relying on others to help as they begin their new life. The sudden turn of events in Afghanistan has shocked Abdul Iman Siddiqui, who worked with the U.S. Army Special Forces from 2012 until he left Afghanistan, helping to remove explosives by day and assisting with operations at night.
And he's saying that I was thinking that the whole world is standing behind us and they're thinking about our ideas, about our hope and about our future. But they all left all of a sudden.
Through his job with U.S. Special Forces, Siddiqui qualified for a Special Immigration Visa, or SIV. And that, along with persistence and luck, got them on a plane to Houston, Texas on August 21st, and into a modest one-bedroom apartment funded by the U.S. government. Sonia Wafek, who is translating for Siddiqui, also is the family's case manager with YMCA International. She is helping other Afghan refugees who have come to Houston in recent weeks get settled.
These families who are coming right now, because they just had to save their lives, so that's why they were coming like with nothing. We will be helping them getting a job. We will be helping them to get the government the benefits like food stamp and Medicaid and all those other stuff. And we'll be helping them be able to get all their documents.
This trip to the store is being paid for by the Tram Ho family. Ho came to the U.S. as a teenage refugee in the wake of the Vietnam War. And she wanted to give back and also allow her American-born kids to meet refugees firsthand.
We were lucky when we came to America in 1981 to establish a new life here, and the Americans have opened their arm to help us, and we'll do the same for the Afghans.
Siddiqui said starting over with nothing at 36 is hard. But staying in Afghanistan wasn't an option since he felt his life was in danger. He worries about families still there, and he hopes to get them out too. A new country, a new language, it's a lot. But he is looking to his children.
He's happy that at least his kids are able to have a good life in here and have a good future.
It's a life this family will build together with the help of others. Dina Mitchell for VOA News, Houston, Texas.
Finally on VOA Asia, the United Nations Environmental Program held a ceremony earlier this week marking the end of toxic leaded gasoline use in vehicles worldwide. A company in Nairobi, where the UNEP is headquartered, is working on the next step, converting buses and utility vehicles to electric power. VOA's Lenny Rivaga reports from Nairobi.
Engineer Lucy Mugala and her colleague Esther Wairimu are fine-tuning plans to outfit a public transport bus with lithium batteries. The two work at Opibus, a privately owned 4-year-old Nairobi company that converts cars and public transport vehicles to run on electricity. Mugala says converting this bus reduces the effects of greenhouse emissions responsible for global warming.
A lot has been done currently in terms of mitigating the effect of greenhouse gases in Kenya, but very little is being done in the vehicle sector. And that is a gap that we're trying to fill as Opibus. We are looking at maximizing impact by targeting the largest sector, which is the public transport sector, and with this we will be able to step by step be able to achieve a low carbon economy in Kenya and in Africa at large.
Douglas Aguata has been in the public transport industry for 15 years. On average, Aguata spends around $80 on fuel daily, a cost he'd like to see come down. However, Aguata says drivers like him may find it challenging to adapt to electric vehicles.
Converting the engines from petrol to electric is quite costly, and you'll also find that there may be a scarcity of charging stations, and this may prove to be quite a challenge.
Joshua Anampiu is the strategy and planning manager at the National Environment Trust Fund, or NET Fund, a state corporation that raises funds for sustainable environmental management in Kenya. Anampiu says shifting towards clean energy requires investment from the government, but argues the investment will be worth it.
No matter how costly it looks right now, we know in the long run it will be more effective towards preserving our environment, which is an existential threat right now if we don't take care of the environment. So yes, there are areas where we need to put up infrastructure. We need to change the entire mechanisms of the infrastructure. And this obviously is costly. And so going forward, maybe invest now, put in a bit more cash, and then we'll reap the benefits in the future.
For Mugala and other clean energy champions, the challenge will be to reduce the costs of going electric and encourage consumers to go green. Lenny Rovaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Amy Hybels, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Chris Cascao in Washington. Enjoy the day.